From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Michael Martinez, sitting in today for Kodro Namdi. Of course, Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. How's it going, Tom? I haven't seen you in 2 weeks, and I've missed you, man.
Well, you've been in China. You know, you've been actually traveling the world, and I've just been here struggling through cuss words and metro and all kind of guns and all kinds of stuff here in the city. You've missed a lot.
I did miss a lot. It was a big, big adventure, but I do get a little bit homesick when I'm that far away from Washington because D.C. is home. I love D.C., and I have to say that one of the things that makes me feel most at home is when I hear your curmudgeonly voice.
Yeah. Well, do people in China know about Kodro? You took Flat Kodro with you.
I took Flat Kodro with me to lots of places. We went to Tiananmen Square. We went to the Great Wall. We went to see the Terracotta Warriors. And this
giant,
is funny.
Right? Those are huge things, right?
Yeah. Big, big things. Well, the Terracotta Warriors,
yeah.
they're life-size.
Oh, I thought
they're life-size. They're 2,000 years old. But in most of the places where I was taking photos of Flat Kodro, people actually started taking photos of me taking photos of Flat
Kodro.
Yeah,
I'm sure the police were watching you, too.
Lots of CCTV cameras.
Anyway, welcome back. You missed a lot, and we'll catch you up today.
Well, I should say that when I got back on Tuesday and I went on to WAMU.org, one of the first news stories that I read was done by the intrepid Martin Ostermule, cyborg reporter that we have here who just doesn't stop. He's a machine. And he reported that when the council was discussing Mayor Bowser's plan to close DC General and open shelters for homeless families across the city, things got a little contentious to the point where she actually kind of cussed out DC Council Chairman Phil Mendelson within earshot of one Martin Ostermule. What happened and what fueled this outburst?
Well, I'm not surprised the mayor cussed. I mean, she's got a strong personality. She controls it in public. But, you know, they were together this past week fighting Congress over the House committee's attempt to undermine budget autonomy, how the city spends its local tax dollars, which we can get into. But they are way far apart on the mayor's plan to build private homeless shelters around the city in order to close D.C. General by 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And the chairman, frankly, is an NBC4, actually first reported, devised a whole new plan without discussing it with the mayor, and she and the city administrator were furious that he had not.
So for those who haven't been following, can you explain the differences between his plan and the mayor's plan?
It's very simple. The mayor's plan is very expensive. It would be done by leasing private property in 5 of the 7 places at a very expensive cost, something like $600 million over 30 years. Several council members, including the chairman, thought that that plan was a good idea to spread the shelters around the city, but it would be cheaper if you move these 5 of the shelters to public land the city mm-hmm. already owns in 3 cases and buy the land in 2 cases, and it would save a great deal of money. The mayor is furious. She says her plan was well thought out, and we will not, she says, be able to close D.C. General by 2018 if we go through all the preliminary work that has to be done to support the chairman's plan. He says that's ridiculous. We can do it. We're more likely close D.C. General in 2018 with his plan than her plan. She didn't like the council, of course, voted for the chairman's plan, and that infuriated the mayor, and that's where we got the are we calling it the F-bomb?
F-bomb's good, or you can say flippin' on this family broadcast.
Well, you know, everybody knows what we're saying. But anyway, it's just asterisks. And Martin Ostermule was one of the few reporters who actually heard her. But the mayor has a very strong personality. She's very well controlled in public. But like many people, that people have strong personalities in private.
Right. Well, and that's another issue about whether or not something is altogether private when you're doing it in a government building with an earshot of reporters.
Well, she may have thought she was not surrounded by reporters. There were a lot of people around. But the bottom line is the tension between the mayor and the elected council is always, even in friendly times, is a little bit tense. It just is that they compete with each other. But in this case, they supposedly meet every week, the mayor and the chairman, but often it's canceled, maybe by the mayor, maybe by the chairman. And I think this has strained their personal relationships, that at the very time they need to be together fighting on the Hill for the city's budget.
We're going to ask what our first guest has to say about this in just one second, but I do have a question for you first, which is, when you look at the position the mayor is in right now at the council, and you see that tension developing, how much of it reminds you of what happened with Adrienne Fenty 6 years ago, 7 years ago? Do you see herself pinning herself in some of the same corners that Adrienne Fenty found himself in the second half of his being
there?
Yes,
but I think she's aware and more sensitive to it than he was. He almost didn't care. In fact, almost I thought wore it as a badge of honor that he was not like the council members where he once served. She's reached out to them. When she did her State of the District speech this year, she specifically mentioned every council member and something good that they had done and gotten individual applause for them. She has tried to reach out, but she has also said, as she told me directly once on a radio program, not this one, said, when I said, the big criticism I hear about you is that you want your way 100% of the time. And her basic answer was, I do. And if you're working with a legislature, you know, compromise is part of the game. And I think that's one of the differences between her and Adrienne Fenty. I think she's aware that she has to work with the council more, and she just felt like she was blindsided by the chairman.
Well, we're joined in the studio by someone who wants to be on the D.C. Council. David Garber is a candidate, a Democratic candidate for an at-large seat on the D.C. Council. David Garber, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to ask about your campaign in just a minute, but put yourself on the council right now. If you were looking at the mayor's plan that she announced a couple of months ago to close D.C. General, where would you fall? What was your opinion of what she announced a couple months ago? What do you make of how the council is engaging on the issue right now?
So one of the things that I find myself talking about a lot on the campaign trail is this Homeward DC plan to build new residential facilities for people who are experiencing homelessness. And the thing that I've always really admired about the mayor's plan was the idea of putting these facilities around the district and in every ward of the city, which is something that hasn't always been done with things like affordable housing and social services. A lot of the time we tend to build those in neighborhoods where there's least political resistance and where it's cheapest to do so. And so it's a harder job to do it around the city, but I really applauded her for that.
And all the council members, I don't know of a council member who objected to that. They agree that it should be spread out and the D.C. General should close. But do you like
the chairman's plan
more?
The question was always, are we using taxpayer dollars as efficiently as we can with that plan? We were going to lease a lot of spaces, pay a lot of money in rent for these facilities. And so when I am out canvassing neighborhoods across the city and talking to voters, a lot of their main concerns were just with the financial elements of the plan and making sure that people were really being taken care of and that this was a great deal for the city long term.
What's your position?
My position is that I am grateful for the new plan by the council. That's something that I support. I like the idea of having district-owned properties because we can control these facilities for the long term and end up using less of our valuable tax dollars.
If you've got feelings about what happened in the D.C. Council this week or about the mayor's plan to close D.C. General's shelter for homeless families, you can join our conversation by calling 800-433-8850, tweeting us at Kojo Show, or emailing us at kojo@wamu.org. Tom, you get the next question here.
Well, you're running for the council. You're running against Vincent Orange, who's been on the council for some time. He's run. I used to joke because he'd run for mayor. It seemed like every time he's up for mayor, I said, why don't we just pass a law and put his name on every ballot? That way Vincent wouldn't have to.
He's run for chairman. He's run for mayor.
Chairman, mayor, count of Ward 5, at large, mayor, and chairman. So we just put his name on all the ballots. But to be serious,
permanent street signs all around the city.
Right. He did win pretty well. I think 2012, he got 40+% of the vote against a scattered field. There's only three.
He's never actually won a majority of voters.
Well, a lot of people don't. I mean, unless it's Silverman, won with like, what, 17% or something?
And that was a very different race with about 15 right. candidates. So
the point being, he's very well known, even with his troubles.
He's very well known. Fortunately for somebody who's coming in to challenge him, he's well known typically for issues that voters don't really relate to and getting in the papers for things that people aren't that pleased about seeing. And so there's definitely room for new leadership in this position, and a lot of voters are ready for that.
Are you and we'll get to those, but are you and Robert White, who's the other candidate, are you guys going to split the vote and Vincent Orange wins? Some people have suggested, I think, have tried to get you to drop out. Is that not true? You didn't know I was going to ask that question.
No, that's okay. Understandably, candidates are always trying to get their competition to drop out. But
have you tried to get Robert White to drop out?
I don't think that he would drop out, so I'm not going to waste my time.
Well, let's back this up for just a second before we get too inside baseball about the race, and we will get inside baseball about it. To those who are listening who don't know you as well, who don't know you from your time as an ANC, what's been your involvement in local politics in the past, and why do you feel this is a race that you want to be in? Why do you feel that you would do the best job representing the entire city? This is a seat that will represent the entire district.
Absolutely. So the first time I was actually on the Kodjo show was for my role as a neighborhood advocate in the Anacostia neighborhood, and that was a number of years ago now, and that was where I first got started in the district. And I was just a resident in the historic Anacostia neighborhood in Ward 8 and was going to all the local meetings and pretty quickly saw how important it was to have good people in these local offices, whether the ANC level or the council level, because a lot of folks in neighborhoods like Anacostia and around the city don't really feel like their communities are being fought for. And so that was my first inspiration just to get involved as a community member here in the district. I ended up moving to the Navy Yard neighborhood and ran for ANC commissioner down there. And I was running against a 14-year incumbent who was very well known and campaigned hard for that seat and blew him out of the water and ended up serving two terms in that role. And I used that experience as one of my big foundations for my council run right now, because in a neighborhood like that around the baseball stadium and on the Anacostia waterfront, where we're starting a community from scratch, essentially, I got to work on pretty much every issue in the book, from opening a new elementary school to helping small and local businesses with their licensing to cleaning the waterfront and building new parks and working with the development community. So I was able to do a lot and work with members of the community to see real results in a neighborhood that now people really want to be in for the long term.
And where do you live now? Because that's one of Vincent Orange at the Ward 7 race, I think, complained that you've lived all over the city. You lived in the Navy Yard area, but you live in Shaw. Where do you live?
I live in the Shaw neighborhood now. I'm at 5th and Q Street Northwest.
The reason I was looking at your website,
but I see that as a positive thing. I'm running citywide.
Listen, I'm a military brat. I went to 10 different schools from to the 12th grade. But your website says that you are a lifelong resident of metropolitan D.C. Where did you live when you weren't in the city?
I grew up in Northern Virginia and grew up knowing D.C. very well. I grew up going to church in Northeast. My father worked on Capitol Hill. I took art lessons in D.C. I even was in the Washington Ballet Nutcracker for a couple years as a very little child. So I've definitely been in and out of the district my whole life.
All right, cool.
Why run against Vincent Orange? What part of his service on the council do you find that you could do better, or what would you like to correct?
Well, really, whenever I tell somebody I'm running DC council, running for DC council at large, I'm running for the seat that Vincent Orange is currently in, a lot of times the response is, "Oh, you got my support, definitely." And it's almost like I don't even have to finish a sentence. A lot of people are fed up with Vincent Orange in this seat because it doesn't really feel like there's any real action or results coming out of this seat. And so it feels like a wasted council seat at this point. When you see Vincent Orange's name associated with things, it's typically with big ribbon cuttings or stadium projects or honoring corporations. Like, he put a bill out to honor Comcast.
You don't
think
the stadium is a big problem? I mean, you don't think that's a positive thing?
Stadium projects can definitely be a positive thing. I've represented a neighborhood where there's a stadium that brings a lot of life to that neighborhood. I know that the community around RFK, for example, would like to see waterfront development and recreational facilities and make it more of a neighborhood area in a way that it hasn't.
I think he supports bringing the Skins Stadium back, with the Skins building the stadium, but the city preparing the land for it. Would you support that?
I think
that
there's room for a much more creative vision for that waterfront.
No stadium.
There. No stadium.
Okay.
All right. We've got two questions here on the phones that I want to get to, both of which seem to be about whether or not you're qualified to be on the council. And let's take Bill in Washington. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Mr. Gerber, I have a question for you. Though I appreciate your service as an ANC, but it looks like you've never really had a full-time job. Shouldn't you just get a little bit more experience before you run for a higher legislative body?
I don't know where you're looking, but I've definitely held multiple full-time jobs. I've worked in the real estate and community development fields here in D.C. for about the last 10 years.
And also, you've been a substitute teacher. You had to stop because you're running for... I find that an interesting... You've been all over the city as a substitute teacher.
Yeah, I was a substitute teacher here in D.C. for about 2.5 years. Teaching is a full-time job, so if there's any campaigns out there that are pushing that narrative, then... That's kind of an insult to teachers out there.
What did you teach? Do you have or did you just keep the class from running out?
You know,
the
when
doors?
You're a substitute teacher, you don't necessarily specify for a specific subject, but I had the opportunity to work in about 40 different schools across the district, every single ward, every feeder pattern, every age level, ability level, discipline level. I was in schools where the kids were there because they were kicked out of their other schools or expelled, and there's so much opportunity and so much potential in the kids here in D.C., and I'm really grateful for the window that I got through that experience.
Do you support Kaya Henderson?
I do generally
That's
support
the chancellor of the school system.
Kaya Henderson. And when you're on council, you have to work with folks who you don't always agree with to try to push a ball forward in a positive manner, and that's what I would definitely look forward to doing on council.
Okay, Bill, thanks so much for your call. I want to take a call now from Mark in Southwest Washington, who's got something else that he wants to know about what you've been doing professionally. Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, actually, I had another question that I thought someone else was going to ask, but the other guy didn't. And my question was that in this race, I think David Garber's right, that this is sort of a referendum on Vincent Orange. So if you want to vote yes, then you vote for Vincent Orange. If you want to vote no, there are two candidates to vote for, and so that is going to my question is David, are you concerned about splitting the anti-Vincent Orange vote? And you know, in 2014 in Ward 1, was similar situation. We had a council member who'd been there for a long time who had a lot of ethical questions. Jim Graham, he had two opponents, Brian Weaver and Brianne Nadeau. And in the past, Jim Graham had been able to divide and conquer and win, and I fear that's going to happen here. Now, of the two of you, both of you, in my opinion, would be a vast improvement over Vincent Orange, but I think that Robert White has the better campaign, has more endorsements, more volunteers. I think he's got a better shot at winning. So my question is, would you consider doing what Brian Weaver did in 2014 in Ward 1 and saying, you know, I want this, but I'm going to put the interests of the city ahead of my own personal ambition.
Well, I got to say, kudos.
Okay, Mark, thanks for your call.
I got to say kudos to the Robert White team for their supporters out there. But I have been running a strong campaign for the longest period of any candidate in this race. I got in the summer of last year, and not only have we raised the most money of any competitor out there, we've got about 150 volunteers working for us. There's been very limited polling in this race, but the polling that was done showed me about twice as high actually polling as Robert White. So if there's a conversation about somebody being a spoiler, then I think we need to turn the tables a little bit. Right now I'm just focused on Vincent Orange as the incumbent.
Okay. I thought Mark was going to ask you about what you do for a living now. That's where I thought he was
my
going to go.
But
I've heard that question asked a couple of times.
Yeah, so my full-time job is being a candidate for the seat.
He had to stop being a teacher because you can't be a teacher and run.
Right, and that was an issue that popped up a couple of weeks ago. I have a question for you, though, about something that's going on with the schools. I know that the city's wrestling right now with one particular issue about this new school for young men of color that is a big priority of Kaya Henderson's getting that open. It's become an issue with the ACLU. They say the Empowering Males of Color initiative may discriminate against girls and violate Title IX. What's your opinion of this?
Well, I'm actually really looking forward to seeing this school be created. And it's being built in a neighborhood that has been left behind over the years. And there's a lot of kids from around the city that haven't seen the same opportunities as people in well-resourced backgrounds.
Let's tell people, it's at the old Ron Brown, I think, middle school in Northeast Washington.
Yep,
it's
in the Deanwood neighborhood.
Deanwood, and $20 million project. It will open this fall. They're getting the students now. It doesn't even have a name yet. But the ACLU point, well, what about young girls? Mary Che, who's been the most outspoken person on the council, has said, yes, young men of color, boys of color, deserve this school, but there are also young women, young girls who deserve a school that focuses on troubled
people. Absolutely, and I would be supportive of a school that served only girls, and I'm supportive of the school that's proposed to do that for young men.
I'm not sure why the city doesn't just go ahead and do it, rather than wait to be forced to by an ACLU lawsuit and then have to pay the legal fees in addition to paying for the school.
I want to ask you about something different in terms of the law here. I know one of the particular points of opposition that you've had with Vincent Orange is this bill that he's offered up to regulate Airbnb. Why do you disagree with what he's tried to do or the solution that he's offered up?
Yeah, so just a little bit of background. Vincent Orange has been an outspoken critic of Airbnb, which is an online service that a lot of residents use to make some extra income off of their property. So whether they're renting out an English basement for short term or renting out their whole house while they're away, things like that. So I know there's concern within the hotel industry, and that's a base of support for Mr. Orange. But I don't think that we should be over-regulating an industry where residents across the city, and there are a lot of people who are Airbnb-ing their homes east of the river as well. I don't think we should cut off somebody's ability to make money off of their property, especially because prices are rising so much here in the city.
Should there be a tax or a fee for people who might register as an Airbnb and pay a fee for that or part of the rent? Or is it just underground economy?
I don't think it's an underground economy. I think when you make dollars inside the local economy, those dollars are a lot of times spent in the local economy. So it's only a boost to the city long term.
What do you make of these companies that are in the so-called shared economy generally? One of the stories that I was following before I went off to China and I was able to follow it a little bit, the Washington Post was actually inside of the firewall. I could still read the Post while I was over there. That was pretty cool. Was about what happened in Austin, Texas, where Uber and Lyft, the ride-sharing companies, offered their own proposal for regulation that they put up for a ballot initiative. They threatened to leave if voters didn't support it. It failed, and now they're sort of in a situation where they're either going to get called off on their called out on their bluff, or they're just going to pull out of a market. There are a lot of people who feel these companies enter markets, do whatever they want, bully their way into getting regulations that are suited to them. How far do you think the city should be going to be accommodating to some of these companies?
Well, the reason a lot of these companies are so successful is because they fill a gap that didn't exist before and that a lot of residents are pleased with. And so you have when Uber came to the scene here in D.C., people flocked to it because they didn't have a great experience with D.C. cabs. And they have a lot of loyal customers now in a lot of cities around the world, and it's because they offer a variety of services that they're not getting elsewhere. So I think we should always take it back to the residents. What are we doing to serve what residents are most interested in seeing across the city?
And there are a lot of disruptions in economies, including the hospitality industry. But what do you say to the person who lives next door to someone who has an Airbnb business going where there's someone new every day into that house coming and going, additional traffic, perhaps additional noise, just additional disruption, and you don't know if that person is going to be safe and burn the house down? How does a resident in a neighborhood know who's next door at their apartment, condo, co-op, or private home?
I think that would be living out of fear much more than is the reality of what's going on here in D.C. And I can understand the hesitation of wanting whole neighborhoods to turn over to Airbnb users, which I don't believe is actually happening anywhere across the city. But I believe in a property owner's ability to make money off of their property and contribute visitors to the city and people who are going to be spending money here in our neighborhoods. So that's what we're seeing more than many of the fearful things that you have just described.
If you've got questions or comments for David Garber, you can join our conversation at 800-433-8850. You can tweet us at Kojo Show. Email us at kojo@wamu.org. Right now, I want to take a call from Michael in Washington, D.C. Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I actually rented a property from David Garber, and I was forced out by David Garber. And I'm just trying to understand if he is, when he makes his announcement that he's going to run for city council, if he's saying he wants to force out corruption in government, how does he rent a home? How do I rent a home from him? And how does he enter my home with my 13-year-old daughter home alone without giving me notice, forced me out of Ward 8, B Street, Anacostia, with my wife and four daughters into homelessness, where I had eventually had to move my family into a hotel. I had to go live in Central Union Mission, and I'm a person that makes a really good amount of money. I made over $100,000 last year, and David Garber was my landlord, and I would be happy to tweet pictures of a molded bathroom that he wouldn't fix, and videos of water leaking through the house and the fixtures.
Okay, well, we can get the point at this point. Let's allow him a chance to respond. So
you obviously know this person.
Yeah, do you know this person?
I do know this person. Unfortunately, this is a situation that has already been resolved, and one that was very trying for me as well. Fortunately, it was something that I let people who are much smarter than I am legally take care of, and so I don't really have a whole lot to say on the matter because I don't believe that there is a whole lot of truth to what's being said.
Okay, did you basically follow the rules to remove the tenant?
I did follow the rules, yeah.
How do you make $100,000 a year and then go find homeless shelter? I don't quite get that.
I don't know.
One.
That's a lot more money than I've ever made.
But housing, let's just talk about housing in general. I mean, some of the council members would like to do a lot more to build public housing. You've endorsed the idea of more subsidized housing for workforce and low-income people. How do you do it? I don't think we have to describe the problem. Describe the solution.
Yeah, what are specific things that you feel the council can do that would actually move the needle on this issue?
So one of the best things that we can do for the diversity of communities that exist across the city is just make sure that when we are talking about economic development and when we're talking about affordable housing, that we're talking about it in a way that brings both to all parts of the city. A lot of the time, at least in the past and still goes on today, is that when we're talking about affordable housing and when we're building affordable housing, we end up doing it in places that are often overburdened by not having a diverse economy, which then leads to neighborhoods not being able to attract things
so
like
how do
grocery
you fix
stores
it?
And
that's
retail.
A description of
so
the
we
problem.
Have, I mean, the, so the problem is that we aren't diversifying the locations that we're building this a lot of the time, so we
so
need to do a better
it?
Job of
how
building
do you do
it
that?
Across
you
the
require
city.
Require all major projects, whether it's with city money or not, that if you build in this city, that you build affordable homes?
Absolutely, I mean, on city-owned projects.
No, not on city-owned projects. Opposite of city-owned projects. There aren't that much city-owned land in Ward 3, for example. How can you make somebody buy affordable homes in Ward 3?
Well,
how can you make them do it?
How do you make somebody buy an affordable
home? No, how can you make developers build affordable housing in Ward 3?
We have to spend more money doing it, unfortunately.
You mean
but right now the response is putting it in neighborhoods like Deanwood and Ward 7, like Anacostia and Ward 8, like Congress Heights, where there's already a lot of it, and that's important to keep.
But I agree with
it
you.
Only
that's where
perpetuates
it is,
the economic divide that exists across the city.
How do you get
city?
More in Ward 4, even in Upper Ward 4? How do you get more affordable? Does the city buy it to pay for it?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what we're doing with the homelessness initiative right now, is making sure that we are buying and owning facilities because the city's not going to get any cheaper.
All right. While we're on housing, we got time for one more question for you, David Garber. We're going to go to Lance in Northeast. Lance, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Quick question. Two questions. One, do you believe there's a right, homeless people have a right to shelter provided by D.C. government? And two, if you were on the council right now, would you have supported Mendelsohn's plan rewrite of Muriel Bowser's homeless initiative, or would you have been siding with the proposal of the mayor, Mayor Bowser?
Lance, thanks for your call.
You know, I just ran into Chairman Mendelsohn last night, and I told him that I was really pleased with his plan and that I would have been a backer had I been on council. So,
yeah, you said that early in the program, you support the revised plan by the chairman. What about the right
absolutely.
To shelter, which is a law in the city?
I do believe that we should always go out of our way to make sure that everybody's taken care of across D.C. This is a place where there are a lot of people with a lot of resources, but also a lot of people who still have a lot of needs. So we as a city have the resources and just need to get creative on how we can best serve our population of people who are experiencing homelessness.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. David Garber is a Democratic candidate for an at-large seat on the D.C. Council. His primary is coming up next month.
June 14th.
Maybe we'll see you before that election day. So until then, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
When's early voting start? June 4th? When is early voting? Do you know offhand?
Good question. I don't think they've announced all the details for early voting yet.
Okay, but it's June 14th is primary day, so about a week before that.
Okay.
Good enough. Thank you very much. Don't be like Jack Evans. You have to leave now.
God, I missed you, Tom.
The things that we had Jack in here, was it last week, and he wouldn't leave. I thought he was going to camp out under the desk.
This is home to me. And speaking of that, there are a couple things that I want to bring up before we get into our conversation with our next guest. The first is a poll that the Washington Post published yesterday that was in today's paper. They found that 9 in 10 Native Americans say they are not offended by the nickname of the Washington football team, Redskins.
9 in 10 Native Americans.
Nine in ten Native Americans say they are not offended.
This is a poll of a little over 500 people who self-identified as Native American.
Do you think this is significant? Already, Washington Post, now reporter, former columnist Robert McCartney, who's on Fridays on WAMU, has said this has forced him to reevaluate his protest of the Redskins' name.
Well, the nice thing I'll say first is I think I respect the fact that the Washington Post went to a great deal of effort to identify people who self-identified as Native Americans.
And this is a survey of some 500 people.
Although I think Michael Schaefer, the editor of the Post, of the Washingtonian, said in a tweet today that if they thought it was acceptable to use the name, why didn't they say Redskins in the headline instead of Native Americans? But I thought the question was a little awkwardly phrased. One of the questions: do you find the name offensive, or doesn't it bother you? And I just thought that "or doesn't it bother you" was kind of confusing for people to answer that question. But again, 73% said they didn't think the name was disrespectful. And we're talking about Native Americans who self-identified. So it's significant. A lot of polling has shown that people particularly don't think the name is Redskins is an offensive name, but many people do. I think Robert Johnson, the columnist, said he doesn't like the name, but he's just going to stop fighting to get the team to change it.
Do you think this kind of survey is something that ultimately might affect the push to get the team to come back to Washington, to build a new stadium here?
Well, that's the politics of this. The city, Mayor Bowser, she doesn't like the name either. The city wants the team back. I mean, the city
Jack
leadership
Evans really wants team back.
But the leadership of the city, generally speaking, the most majority of them want the city to have the Redskins back in town with a new stadium built by Dan Snyder at the site of RFK. Not everyone agrees with that, but there's almost 200 acres of land over there that could be redeveloped to accommodate everything that the residents want, plus the stadium. But we'll get into that. But if Dan Snyder had released this poll, we would have laughed it out of the room.
Next thing I want to ask you about, and also we can get our next guest to talk about this a little bit,
I'm sure he has no view on this at all.
Metro on Thursday put out a revised schedule for its subway maintenance blitz. I think the project's called Safe Track.
Right.
They've changed the schedule of the repair work that they're going to be doing. They announced this plan the Friday that I left, 2 weeks ago. What do you make of what's going on here?
Well, I think there was a big fight over who was going to lead Metro in the Metro system. The leaders of Maryland, Virginia, D.C. picked Paul Wedderfeld. And he now has come up with a plan to do 3 years of maintenance work in 1 year. It's going to be horrific interference for people who depend on Metro. And people are trying. I don't know. I mean, I give the Metro system for trying. Whether it's going to work, who knows? But we do know what's happening now doesn't work, and that too many people, as I've said on this program before, I've essentially abandoned Metro on weekends because I don't know whether it's going to be running well or not. And so I don't use it. But I would like to use it, and so I'm hopeful this will be a fresh new start. This is almost as important as the construction of the Metro system itself. The whole region has got to get involved, and we'll talk to our next guest about to make sure that the local governments, the county and the city, do something to ease the traffic problems we're going to have on the lines as they shut down to be fixed.
We're joined now in the studio by Mark Elrich. He's an at-large member of the Montgomery County Council. He's a Democrat. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
How do you feel about all this and how it's going to affect people who live in Montgomery County?
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to have a tough impact on people.
Starting August 1st is the first time it really gets into Tacoma Park to Silver Spring, a week shutdown.
There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's not going to be easy, but I don't think Metro really has a choice. I mean, you either don't fix it because you have no time space to fix it, and you run the risk of more and more failures, which just, I think, puts you in an endless downward cycle, or you bite the bullet and say, in order to get this thing right, we're going to have to take the time and space to do it.
One of your big issues of when you were first joining the council, what was it, 2006, 2007?
Yeah.
So it was rapid bus transit. What do you see?
Rapid transit.
Oh, whatever that
is. Yes.
You know, get on the bus, Gus. All right, in the event. What do you think the county should do to make certain that the transportation, the commute mornings and nights can work? What can you see the county do?
Well, I think
concerned the county governments, the whole governments won't do enough, and people will get stuck, and then it'll just be a nightmare.
Right. Well, we're not sitting around with a bunch of empty, unused buses that you can simply deploy and move mass people on these particular routes because they're already moving people on other routes.
And Montgomery County doesn't have any traffic issues at all.
No, but Metro does say it will make more buses available on these spots that are closed down.
Right.
But I mean, in terms of traffic, I hate that there's no enforcement of traffic in downtown Washington that I can see. But traffic enforcement would need to be stepped up. No parking, loading zone, all these things to allow people to move on the streets while the Metro's being fixed.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to look at anything we can do to increase the capacity of the existing roadways. And if it means, you know, removing parking or lengthening the periods of time. Just temporarily.
Yeah.
Enough to get things moving and work really closely with Metro. I know that Metro had plans for something more radical, and they thought they were going to have to close the Bethesda stations for water problems and looking at running buses up and down 355. So I think we have to look at this. We've got to, you know, throw the resources where we have them. Metro's approach, though, would let you throw large amounts of buses at dedicated areas as opposed to trying to spread them over the entire system, which wouldn't you want with very little bang anywhere.
So who would run this? And Ike Leggett, obviously, is a county executive, but who would be in charge of this in your county to make sure that you respond as flexible as possible?
Well, it would be our Department of Transportation and, you know, Al Rushdie. And we'd have to be working really, really closely with Metro. They really do have the backbone that will or will not make this succeed.
I want to ask about another aspect of this. What about Metro's financial situation? It looks like a dedicated funding source from Congress isn't really likely to happen at this moment. What's your sense for what needs to be done to cover the system's massive operating budget deficits as well as its capital needs in the form of regular maintenance?
Look, I personally think we should do what should have been done when Metro was created. There's this enormous public investment, $100 billion, and property owners adjacent to those stations largely have made a killing on the public investment, made those places more desirable to locate, increased property values, jurisdictions like mine, increased density on the premise that you were next to a station. So I believe we should have had impact taxes or, you know, transit taxes adjacent to those stations so that the system would have recovered some of the money that we put into it. Because I look at this as a public investment with a very, very large private benefit. And they should have had to share some of their benefits.
You're listening to the Politics Hour. I'm Michael Martinez, sitting in today for Kodwo Namdi, joined as always by Tom Sherwood, a resident analyst, reporter for NBC4, a columnist for the Current Newspapers. We're talking with Mark Elrich, at-large member of the Montgomery County Council. He's a Democrat, and you can join our conversation by calling 800-433-8850, tweeting us at Kodwo Show or emailing us at kodwo@wamu.org. Tom, sorry to cut you off.
That's okay. The Purple Line. Were you a supporter of the Purple Line?
I thought the connection needed to be made. When they extended a longer Purple Line, it made more sense than the original short Purple Line.
There's no provision for the development that will come around the Purple Line to have higher taxes either, right?
No, there is not. And I really believe there should be.
Do you still play the guitar? That's what most you know, this guy is from Tacoma Park, so let's just be clear who he is. You're like the former SDS and student. What is that?
Students for Democratic Society.
Right. You haven't been for a long time, though. Are you a supporter of Bernie Sanders?
Frankly, yes.
I thought so. I knew that would be a correct.
It was like
guess.
A wild guess on your part.
No. Yeah. Wild.
So you went
guess.
From guitar to Bernie Sanders. Yes. Is that the mental map that you just took?
Yes, I know. But this is a politics hour. I mean, do you think Bernie's sabotaging Hillary Clinton's chance to beat Donald Trump?
No.
See how we move from national politics to local and back? We'll be back to local.
It's very subtle. Gene
McCarthy did it, you know, to Hubert Humphrey in 68. You might remember that.
I do remember that. I was a Bobby Kennedy supporter.
He jumped in after Gene McCarthy started revving up.
Yes. I thought Bobby had a more complete package than Gene McCarthy.
But he never endorsed Hubert Humphrey. He said he would vote for him, but never endorsed him. You think Bernie Sanders, if Hillary wins, will get the endorsement?
Look, I think Bernie's made it really clear that Donald Trump is unacceptable, and most of the posse that was riding with Trump toward the nomination, and that nobody is going to do anything that indicates any kind of vacillation about whether it's okay not to have a Democrat elected. So I don't think he's going to sabotage this.
Okay, Mike's going to take us back to local.
I will, and I do have some budget questions to ask you in just a second, but while we were talking about
the huge tax increase they just passed on all the poor citizens of Montgomery County.
Give me 1 second to get to that first, because while we're talking about stuff that gets people fired up, there was an issue over the last couple months about a development plan for the West Bard project, right, off of River Road. And at the end of it all, this was about people who live in suburban counties who are uncomfortable with the urbanization of suburban counties, or whether or not developers were pulling all of the strings. What did you make of how all of this played out in the end? And did you feel that the people who are fighting this development that's coming to the West Bard area had a leg to stand on in all this?
I think they had two legs to stand on for every resident who opposed it. Look, I mean, we talk about urbanization. This Montgomery County has these things called activity centers. COG, all the jurisdictions have activity centers. Council of Governments, yes. West Bard was never an activity center. It is never going to have transit. It is nowhere close to transit. Buses run really infrequently. So if you're going to do density and urbanization, you don't do it in a place that, first of all, you're never targeted for development, and second, has none of the characteristics of an urban environment to even give you the ability to duplicate an urban environment. There's no grid of streets. If you've ever been on River Road, there's no grid there.
And that parking lot around the Giant, which is a big Giant, right, is a gigantic parking lot.
Right, and they'll put a road through it and declare, yeah, a grid. And I just think it's wrong. I mean, if you're going to do density, don't do it there. And at the end of the day, you've got to measure the density against the ability of your infrastructure to support it, whether it's schools or roads or whatever. And we're not doing that.
Wasn't it Roger Berlin? Who was it who cut the size of the project first proposed? This is not unlike union negotiations where you ask for more than you expect to get. But the project was, West Bard, was cut in half. And that's still too large?
Well, it was taken off of River
Road.
Oh,
it's passed. So I'm not sure.
It's passed.
All right, so it's going to happen, right?
A modified version.
And we'll see what happens, what the market does and what gets built. I thought that taking the stuff off River Road was a good thing, but I still think that the total amount of development on West Bard was probably too much. But that's not saying nothing should have happened. I mean, I would have supported development there in excess of the previous plan. The question is, how much development is too much, and can you support it?
That's the interesting politics happening in Montgomery County, is that the county is becoming much more urban. What is your annual budget now, $5 billion or something
Let's talk about the budget.
Yeah, well, you guys just passed the recordation tax. Were you for that?
Yes, I would have liked to have nuanced it a little bit differently.
You would like to charge the higher-income people more.
I would have liked to have gotten at the more expensive properties, but particularly commercial properties, at a higher rate. There's something about having it's sort of like a flat tax, and it hits everybody in a more or less equal way. And I don't view in this day and age as the right way to be doing taxes. So I, in general, would like to have us look at making our taxes more progressive.
And in the end, this was about schools in a lot of ways. The council approved a $2.4 billion school appropriation. What's that money going to do?
Well, it's going to add over 800 teachers and classroom people and counselors. And I'm a former teacher. And, you know, we're trying to get back to 2009 levels of class size. That's not even our best year. I mean, at 2009, things had eroded for a number of years. So we're trying to bring class sizes down. We used to have targets. We're no longer meeting our targets on the east side of the county or the west side of the county. Class size definitely impacts instruction, particularly when you have to teach the most multiple levels in the same class. So if I had a 90-minute session with all kids who are at the same level, it's 90 minutes of instruction on a level. If I'm expected to take that same 90-minute section divided into three different levels of instruction, you're delivering three different 30-minute lessons. So it's kind of crude, but it works out sort of like that if you're a teacher. And so it takes 3 days, if you look at it, to deliver the same lesson you used to deliver to kids in one day. I think having, you know, lower class sizes and more aides in the classroom is really critical. When I started teaching, I had an aide most of the day for all the elementary school subjects I taught.
156,000-something students in the county, expected to grow another 10,000 in the, I can't remember how quickly, but pretty fast.
A few years.
Teachers make about $78,000 a year on average. It seems to me with the greater urbanization of the county, you're going to grow faster than these this recordation tax. I mean, that's only bringing another $100 million or so into the school system. And only in government can you say only $100 million or so.
We're on radio.
It doesn't seem like enough.
Well, you know, you're right. I'm glad you said it and didn't make me say it first.
Well, I'm not running for anything.
Look, we got to be honest about this.
I mean, you're
this
racing to catch up, but I don't see anything where you catch up.
Well,
you're
let me ask.
It sounds like Metro.
Let me ask a sidebar question to that, though, because the school system has always been one of the crown jewels of the
right.
county. Do you feel like the county is in jeopardy of losing that in some ways? I mean, people moved to Montgomery County for the schools.
Look, to be blunt, you kind of have different school systems. Mm-hmm. You have a school system on the west side of the county and a school system on the east side of the county. You have different outcomes. Minority students, their performance, I hate to use the achievement gap, but, you know, however you measure what they've learned, is at a different place than students on the west side of the county. This deals with what the school system asked for construction for the next 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was not all their construction needs, which are frankly multiples of this amount. It gets us through the next 6 year period. So we have real challenges.
We've got a question here about school construction that I want to take from Maher in Rockville. Maher, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Maher, and I'm from Potomac, Maryland. Many in Montgomery County, I visit with a lot of people and know a lot who are very concerned about the leveling of school buildings. One after another, they're getting leveled to the ground, and new fancy buildings are being erected. And now they're thinking of raising taxes to support that. And all that is going on when the level of education is going down, even in the Potomac area, in the high schools and in this area. So it's a lot of concern to people. Why are schools that are not so old being torn down? You can renovate them or add to the structure, but it's ridiculous. And people frankly think that this is fraught with corruption.
Okay, Maher, thanks so much for your call. Mark Elridge.
Okay, I don't think it has anything to do with corruption. I think it has something to do with buildings, school buildings. I went to Einstein, and I was in the first class that graduated Einstein in 1967. That building was completely repaced. It didn't even last, you know, 40-something years. I think there's something to say about how buildings were built historically. I've asked the question about whether it's worth it to tear buildings down or rehab them, and the school system insists they've done an analysis and that, you know, rebuilding it beats rehabbing it, but there's going to be a statewide commission. And I'm actually looking forward to it because, you know, we've had, frankly, this issue about fire stations. People come in and say other jurisdictions build the same fire station you're building for less money. So we need to get this out in the open. We've got to figure out, are we building a more expensive building because it's going to last longer now, or are we just building a more expensive building? Am I building atriums and things which are nice and artistic but add nothing to instructional value? And that money could be used to, you know, build more schools or other things.
But Tom Sherwood.
I'm not unsympathetic.
They're more environmentally sensitive now, though. Or at least they should be.
Right.
I think they are. Now, in 2013, I like this old nugget. In the Bethesda magazine called you the contrarian of the county council. And although some of the things you wanted have actually come to pass, so we won't worry about that. But what, just in terms of politics for the big picture of Montgomery County, it seems to me it's got a lot of intractable problems. Are you positive? Do you think you've got the Republican governor, Larry Hogan, already starting to gear up for running for re-election? Do you have a candidate for governor that you'll support in 2018?
Look, those are multiple questions. I think Hogan has
a state has a lot to say about how well the county does
right.
in terms of what support it gives for roads and other things and schools. So you guys have to gear up for 2018. Let's forget about this 2016.
I think we have to gear up. I think Hogan's performance is frankly mixed. I don't think he's everything that everybody was
afraid of. That's a virtual endorsement coming from you.
It's not, you know, I try to, you know, I'm a I'm a very progressive Democrat, but there are other people who have equally legitimate ideas, and I think that, you know, at some point you've got to start looking at the individual ideas and the merit, and perhaps there is merit in some things that people think who you might not normally agree with. And I think that there have been some things the governor has done that has been really good, but not funding county schools and not funding transportation and the cuts to the Purple Line, which landed a bunch of money on our backs, were not very good. So I wish he was more equanimous and that he didn't feel the need to treat jurisdictions that didn't vote for him in an unsympathetic way. But I don't think everything he's done other than that is a negative, and I think he surprised a lot of people by being mixed.
I have one more political question.
Well, I think I might have the same question that you're thinking of.
County executive?
Yeah.
You
and I are mind-melding.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll let Michael ask it, but he's tired from China, so I'm going to ask it.
No, this is like the best thing for my jet lag right now, getting in here, mixing it up.
2014, you considered running, or in 2013, right. You considered running for county executive, but Ike Leggett unretired and went back into the fray again, and now he's apparently, people expect him to retire again, although I haven't seen it written in solid, ink. Would you run for county executive, or would if he doesn't run again?
Yeah, I would really seriously consider it. If he
doesn't,
that
we will really seriously
I will really. I've thought about it, but it's complex. You have to think of what kind of counsel you're likely to have, because the relationship I think between the counsel and the executive is really critical, and I'd want to know who else was running, and where I could be more effective. I mean, if you can be executive but don't wind up being able to lead, that's kind of an empty victory, and if you can do things more effectively on the council. That might be a more useful place to be. So that's something I'd look at.
Do you have a job other than your council job?
No, I gave up teaching when I got elected.
Okay. Wow.
Well,
much does it pay? I don't even know how much it pays. Do you know?
We're up to 120. The next increase will take us to 127.
What is that? But the average income in Montgomery County is pretty high. Do you know a median income, what it is?
I don't remember median. Okay. But we're not, this is not bad pay.
Well, we're gonna have to wind down from there, because that'll do it for today. And Tom can ask you about music and your paychecks the next time you come back on the show. Maybe talking about running for county executive.
These are real human beings. I want to bring out the color of them.
Mark Elrich is an at-large member of the Montgomery County Council. He's Democrat. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you,
Tom Sherwood. As always, good to see you. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4, a columnist for the Current newspapers. That's it for the show today. But remember, we've got lots happening online and in person. It's going to be rainy again tomorrow, so head to Politics and Prose at 3:30 when WAMU reporter Martin Ostermuhl will be there talking with a local author about the history of the bicycle and American life. More details on that and the rest of the upcoming and past events in the WAMU in your bookstore series are available at wamu.org/books. While you're there, visit kojoshow.org to explore our archives. And remember, you can stream the show online or listen via your favorite podcast app. But however you listen, have a great weekend. Watch the Preakness tomorrow. If you go, wear a poncho. And be sure to meet us back here on Monday at noon. We'll check in with the tech entrepreneur Steve Case on our region's role in the third tech wave. Plus, a new poll says 9 out of 10 Native Americans are not offended by the name of Washington's football team. We'll consider what that means for the long-running debate. Thanks for listening. I'm Michael Martinez, sitting in for Kojo.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at wamu.org, and thanks.